Krishna Prabhu, our host, asked me to speak a little bit about the importance of the chanting of the holy name, so I will speak a little bit on this topic tonight, and I will, maybe we can switch it over. Thank you. So I will read the 7th verse of the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as it is.
Tasmat
sarveshu
sarveshu
kaleshu
kaleshu
mam
anusmara
yudhya
cha
mai
arpita
manaha
budhihi
mam
eva
esyasi
asamshayaha
tasmat sarveshu kaleshu
mamanu smara yudhya cha
mayarpita mano buddhi
Mamevaishyasa samshayaha
Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu
Mamanu smara yudhya cha
Mayarpita mano buddhi
Mamevaishyasa samshayaha
Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu
Mamanu smara yudhya cha
Mayarpita mano buddhi
Mamevaishyasa samshayaha
Tasmat
Therefore,
sarveshu,
at all,
kaleshu,
times,
mam,
me,
anusmara,
go on remembering,
yudhya,
fight.
Cha,
also,
mai,
unto me,
arpita,
surrendering,
manaha,
mind,
buddhihi,
intelligence,
mam,
unto me,
eva,
surely,
esyasi,
You will attain.
Asamshayaha.
Beyond the doubt.
Translation. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duties of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. Purport by His Divine Grace, S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. This instruction to Arjuna is very important for all men engaged in material activities. The Lord does not say that one should give up his prescribed duties or engagements. One can continue them and at the same time think of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna. This will free one from material contamination and engage the mind and intelligence in Krishna. By chanting Krishna's name, one will be transferred to the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, without a doubt. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yudhya mayarpita mano buddhir mamevaishyasa samshayaha. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtara Kuparishvina Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namne Namaste Saraswati Devi Guravarni Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschutya Deshatarini Panchakau Patarugyascha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedantara Srivastavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Ajanu Lambita Bhujo Kanaka Vadato Sankirtanai Kapitaro Kamala Yataksha Vishwambaro Vijavaro Yugadharma Palo Vande Jagat Priyakaro Karuna Vataro Yanta pravishya mama vachi mamam prasuttam sanjeevaya takila shakti darak svadamna anyamscha hasta charana shravanat bhagadim prananamo bhagavate purushaya tuvyam. So in this 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in general, Krishna is very much stressing the simple point that one should mold his life in such a way that he can always remember God. Life is a difficult thing. We have so many duties to perform, so many busy activities are there. But in reality, if we forget God, we are almost dead. Practically, somebody who does not remember God is practically dead. Because the life is coming from God. We are living only because of God. And if we forget Him, we are cutting ourselves from Him in our mind. And if we cut ourselves from the source of life, we are as good as dead. If we cut a limb of our body and put it aside, this limb will not be able to survive. This limb does not have an independent existence. And therefore, the limb which is cut out of body becomes useless. It rots and everyone despises it. So in the same way, if we cut ourselves from the source of life, we become dead. And our consciousness becomes rotten. And we know rotten things smell bad. So in the same way, the consciousness of a person who has forgotten God becomes dirty. It starts emanating bad smell of material contamination. And what we can experience in this world is exactly this situation. People, they cut themselves from their inherent connection with God. And because they have forgotten God, so many bad things come into their mind. Their mind becomes rotten, and in this rotten mind, so many bad things naturally appear. And basically, when we cut ourselves from God or from remembrance of God, we render ourselves useless as much as the limb which is cut from the body becomes useless, becomes totally, virtually good for nothing. So, therefore, Krishna, in this chapter, he stresses this point, answering the question of Arjuna, how to remember you in the moment of death. At the end of the 7th chapter, Arjuna asks so many questions, many, many important questions about philosophical points. But somehow or other, Krishna didn't pay so much attention to the questions of Arjuna. He answered all of them very quickly. In a couple of verses, he answered 6 or 7 questions of Arjuna. And the rest of the chapter, he is answering the last question of Arjuna. How to remember you at the time of death? Because the time of death is a critical moment in our life. The time of death is the moment when we basically are not in control of our mind. In our so-called normal condition, we are more or less in control of our mind. Even in a normal condition, you know, God knows what the mind thinks. I may not like what he thinks, but he still does it. He's a stupid fellow. He has his own agenda. And according to this agenda, he lives. You know, if we observe our mind as an independent entity, we can see that it's a funny kind of entity. It has the existence on his own. So even in a normal condition, we are not really in control of our mind. So many stupid things come to our mind without our desire or without our willingness to do it. But at the moment of death, that we can say for sure, we are absolutely not in control of our mind. We will be totally disturbed because this will be an existential crisis. The mind will be so agitated and so disturbed that we will not be able to really cope with it. We know that sometimes during this lifetime, when we are agitated, when some real agitation is coming to our mind, it's very difficult to really deal with the mind. You know, we don't want to think about somebody who has offended us. But we cannot think about anything else. We can only think about him. Again and again, his image comes to our mind. Again and again, we think about him. Again and again, it's just like a big grinder. You know, some useless, completely useless. We want to stop it. We want to become calm and peaceful, but we can't. Because the mind has, you know, this ability. If it's agitated, it's very difficult to cool it down. So, even in a normal condition, or so-called normal condition, it's so difficult. Just imagine what will happen with us when we are dying. You know, that means we will have to part with everything which is near and dear to us. You know, it's basically total, complete tragedy, drama. We don't know what's going ahead of us, what's going to happen with us, you know, and, you know, the whole life is in turmoil. Everything is in turmoil. Because, you know, when we live in a normal life, a so-called normal life, we are kind of used, we have this, you know, habit of planning. Tomorrow will happen this, and day after tomorrow will happen this, and then in 1 year something else will happen, in 5 years this will happen, and then something else will happen. But when the death comes, we realize nothing will happen tomorrow. Or at least I don't know what will happen. I have no clue. I have no slightest idea what's going to happen with me. And this in itself is very frightening. This in itself is horrible. You know, because we want to have some kind of security, and security means some general understanding what will happen with us. And at the moment of death, there is zero security, no security whatsoever. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. Therefore, this question which Arjuna asked is extremely important for every one of us. How to remember God at the moment of death? Because, again, we will not be able to remember something which we want to remember at the moment of death. Sometimes in India, because in India everyone more or less knows this philosophy, that at the moment of death you should think about God. And people think, you know, it's a good philosophy. I can live nonsense life, and then at the moment of death remember God. Krishna says, it's not going to work. I'm sorry. It is not going to work. It's not a good proposition. It's not a good plan. Because, and that's why he gives so much stress to this particular question. Other questions, what is karma, what is adhyatma, what is abhyagya, and all these things, what is, you know, what is soul, individual soul, jiva, they have theoretical importance for us. It's important for us to understand who is God and what is jiva. But what really has the practical importance for us is this only one question: how to remember God at the moment of death? In one sense, it's the most important question. An answer to this question we all have to know. Antenarayana Smriti in Srimad Bhagavatam, another Puranas, it's a common phrase in Sanskrit, Antenarayana Smriti. There is a prescription that at the time of death I have to remember Narayana. How to remember him? This is the trick. And this trick is in one sense simple, and Krishna explains it. He says, specifically in this particular verse which we read, Tasmat sarvesu kalishuma manusmara yudhicha. He says, your next life or your next destination will be what you think at the moment of death. And therefore, you have to remember about me all the time. Tasmat sarvesu kalishu mamanusmara yudhicha. And there are two important reasons why we have to remember about God all the time. First of all, we don't know when the death will come. The death is unexpected. This is a very peculiar characteristic of human life. You know, like little worm, he more or less knows when he will die. It's more or less, you know, of course if you step on him, he may also have unexpected death. But usually they live more or less fixed amount of time. Human beings, they can die very early, they can die very late, they can die any moment, they can die tomorrow. Sometimes we think, you know, I have so many years to live, and you know, I will have some time before death to prepare myself. Krishna says, no, tasmat sarvesu kalesu, start now, don't postpone it, because it may happen tomorrow. I mean, we don't want it to happen tomorrow, but it still may. Because again, we are not in control of our destiny. God is in control of our destiny. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, I had a friend of mine, and he went to an astrologer. An astrologer told him that the golden period of your life will start after 52 years. When 52 years will happen to you, there will be golden period of your life. He died when he was 51. He was hoping that, you know, it will be golden period in his life. He had a certified guarantee from a learned astrologer. Didn't help him. Because he died before. You know, no astrologer can say this. You know, there may be some combinations which may give some probability that you will have a long life. But still, astrologer is not in control of our destiny. And only God is in control of our destiny. So one important reason why we have to remember about God all the time is that we don't know when we're going to die anyway. And another more important reason, much more important reason why do we have to remember about God all the time is that because when we remember about God all the time, we will sure remember him at the moment of death. Because this is the way to remember him in the moment of death. Krishna himself says, sadatat bhava bhavita. Whatever your bhava, in this life, your mood, your more or less predominant mood or predominant thought process in this life, sadatat bhava bhavita. This will become the conclusion of your life. And not otherwise. If you don't remember about God at the moment, during the life, you will not be able to remember about him at the moment of death. There is no chance. Because only the mood which is predominant, only the mood which you have cultivated during this lifetime, will come to you automatically at the moment of death. And if you have not cultivated this mood, if you dedicated your life to all kinds of nonsense, then you will not be able to remember God. Usually, and that's funny, people think that God is there to fulfill our desires. People think that God is for us. They forget a simple thing, that it's not God who is for us. We are for God. He is the complete whole, we are part. How the complete whole can be for us? He cannot be for us. The part is naturally the servant of the whole. And we are naturally the part, he is naturally the whole. So, this is how here Krishna explains how we should remember him during the lifetime. He said, "My arpita mano buddhir mamano smarayudacha." You do your duty. You do whatever you are supposed to do. But how you should do it? My arpita. By offering it to me. Whatever you do, you are not doing it for yourself. We will have to do our duties. Nobody will excuse us from doing our duties. We will have children, we have responsibilities, we have so many other things to do. But there is a simple way to remember God. Is to do our duties for Him, not for ourselves. We are naturally egocentric. If we analyze our thought process, it's always about ourselves. What is there for me? What I will get? What I will obtain? What will be benefit from me? Me. Always I in the center. And this egocentric kind of consciousness is symptomatic for the consciousness which is cut or separated from God. But Krishna says there is a process. You please think with your intelligence and your mind what you are supposed to do and do it as an offering to me. We are here in Udupi, and in Udupi traditionally we know that Madhya Geha Bhatta or Narayan Bhatta, who is the father of Madhvacharya, when Madhvacharya was born to him, what he did? He brought him to the temple and he offered him to God. That was the tradition. You know, whatever is there, whatever is valuable in your life, you offer it to God. Because it's not yours anyway. It's His. It anyway belongs to Him. So, in the same way, Krishna here says, "My arpita mano buddhir mam evaisyasi asamshayaha." You know, you give your intelligence or the faculty to decide what you are doing to me. Before doing anything, we have this intelligence, buddhi. And buddhi is this ability in us which decides what we are going to do. So when this thought process comes to us, we have to understand, this is what I have to do for God. I'm doing it for God, not for myself, not for me. It's not for me, it's not about me, it's about Him. You know, again, I started saying this, that people, they usually think that God is for us, that He is supposed to be our servant. They come to the temple only for this purpose. They go to Him to ask Him something. I was recently in Guruvayur, and in Guruvayur, it's a very merciful deity of the Lord, of Lord Krishna, Bala Krishna. He fulfills many desires. There is a famous story in Guruvayur temple how Krishna fulfills everyone's desires. There was one very rich Brahmana. He came once to Guruvayur. And he was old and he was totally invalid. His body was ridden with rheumatism. He couldn't move. His nickname was Urumatha. Uru Madha means the one whose Madha, whose living place, is the palanquin. He had his servants to carry him around in the palanquin. He could move, you know. His whole, every movement would create unbearable pain. You know, this rheumatism is a horrible disease. You know, you cannot move without experiencing pain. So you can only just, you know, sit without moving anywhere. So this Brahmana was ridden with this rheumatism, and he came to Guruvayur to beg for some relief from his pain. And he was carried with the palanquin. And at the same time, there was a young poor fellow who came to Guruvayur. And he came to Guruvayur with one ardent desire. I want to have money, you know. I want to become rich. I really want to become rich because I'm so poor. So this Brahmana rich Brahmana, he was praying to Guru Vairapan, and he was saying, please give me some relief, and if you give me relief, I'll give you money. I have a lot of money. If I'll get some relief, he prepared the whole purse filled with golden coins for the Lord. And there was another, this young fellow, and this young fellow was asking, give me money, give me money, give me money. So what happened once, this old Brahmana was taking bus in the Rudra Tirtha, which is the pond in front of Guru Vair temple, and he put aside his purse on the steps there, and he was taken by his servants to deep. And this young fellow, he was sitting there nearby, and he was praying, give me money, give me money, give me money. And all of a sudden, he heard a voice within his heart, take it, take it, take it. So he ran, he snatched the purse, and he ran away. So this poor Brahmin, he saw that this guy is running with his money. So he became so overwhelmed with you know, he became really indignant. So he stood up and he was running behind this Brahmin, behind this poor fellow. And he was running and running without understanding that all of a sudden he's able to run. You know, his disease was not there, his pain was not there. So, and all of a sudden, he heard the voice. The voice said, stop. Your desire has been fulfilled. So is his. So, this is God. He can fulfill everyone's desire, but at the same time, he's not interested in this business. You know, somebody came to him and said, I can give you money. You know, why God doesn't need us? He doesn't need our money. He doesn't really need our money whatsoever. You know, he can fulfill our desires just to give us some incentive to remember about him. Sometimes people cannot understand this, but yes, God knowing our childish nature, that we are very agitated in mind and we are very childish in our approach to life. You know, we always think, you know, give me something, give me something, give me something. He says, okay, I can fulfill your desires if this is the way for you to remember about me. And sometimes he fulfills, sometimes he doesn't fulfill, because sometimes when he doesn't fulfill, we remember about him more. But his main interest, his real interest, is somehow or other give us the real understanding or the real sense that we have to remember about him. Whether our desires will be fulfilled or not, it's inconsequential. Anyway, we will have to part, you know. This desires, it's really childish, you know. Today we have this desire and we are totally obsessed with this desire. Tomorrow it's not there anymore. It's gone. Or we fulfill this desire and realize that we were cheated once again. I had a friend of mine also. She's a rich lady, very rich lady. She once came to me and she was complaining. She said, I bought a very big car, very, very expensive car. She spent more than $100,000 to buy this car. She said, I was happy for 3 days only. 3 days. On the fourth day, I was driving this car and I didn't feel any happiness. I was working for so long to get this car, I was not happy. So in the same way, we are trying to, you know, we're feeling some agitation around in our mind, and we're trying to fulfill this desire. And for some time, we feel happy because the agitation subsides. When the desire is fulfilled, we think that the happiness which we experienced at that time because our desire was fulfilled. But it was not because our desire was fulfilled. Any object in this world cannot bring us happiness. Because by nature, the objects of this world don't have any inherent quality to give us happiness. That's why, you know, when we obtain the object which we want to obtain, after some time, very quickly it becomes boring. It doesn't bring any happiness anymore, whatsoever. So this is an illusion. We think that if our desire is fulfilled, that we will be happy. No, for some time we have a little peaceful mind, and that's why we feel happy. But Krishna says you can be peaceful all the time. if you remember about me. You don't need your stupid desires to be fulfilled. Just by remembering me, you will be happy. Because he is the source of bliss. He is the source of happiness. When we remember him, when he is firmly established within our heart, the happiness automatically comes to our heart. This is the secret which Krishna is trying to reveal to us. The happiness is coming because he is the source of Ananda. He is the source of happiness. We need happiness, he has it. And he wants to give it. And there is the way how to get it. And this is a simple way. We have to remember about him. And when we remember about him, we become automatically happy. Because God is something which is the essence of our life. It's the source of our life. Once I was asked, two people came to me, and they're a young couple, and they have a little niece. And they said that this little niece, she was 3 or 4 years old. She asked us, who is God? Tell us who is God. And they told me, you know, how to explain to her, how to explain to this little girl who is God. So I gave the standard answer, which is there in Vedanta Sutra. God is somebody who has created everything, who is maintaining everything, and who is destroying everything. They told me, we told her that God is somebody who has created us. And she asked, why we don't see him? And we couldn't answer this question. So what do we answer to this question of a little child? If he has created everything, if he is maintaining everything, if he is destroying, why we don't see him? How we can see him? And the answer to this question is actually very simple. We can see him. Moreover, every day we see him. Every day we experience him. You know, in the same way, you know, if we take a material example, who has created this world? From the material point of view, this world or this source was created by the sun. The sun is the source of it. The sun is giving the life to all the living entities. If there was no sun, there would not be life. You know, the sun has created everything, the sun is maintaining everything, ultimately the sun is destroying everything. So, when the sun is covered by the clouds, we don't see the sun, but we still see the light. And that's why we know the sun is there. The light is there. See, in the same way, we don't see God, but we see his energy. We see the light of God. We see the signs of God. We see the energies of God. It's very logical and it's very natural to understand that the source of all energies should be one. There cannot be many sources of all energies. We have so many energies here, which we experience every time. The source of these energies is one, it's God. And in the same way, when the sun is not there, we don't experience the sun, we feel cold. Like I'm coming from Russia, and Russia is a very cold country. And when there is no sun, then psychologically people feel cold and deprived, and people need so many things. In Russia, you know, in India, people don't need so many things. They can live under the palm tree. Especially here in Karnataka, you take a palm leaf, you bind it together, you have already a wall. And you put another palm leaf on the roof, that's it. You don't need much. In Russia, you need so much. You need heaters, you need all these devices, you need cords, you need so much cloth. Why? Because there is little sun. In the same way, when there is no God in our life, we need a lot. When God is there, we don't need much. Because we are happy and because we feel the warmth of God. When we remember about him in our heart, then we don't need much. But when we don't remember about him, all of a sudden we need so much. And the more people deprived of God within their heart, the more they are dependent on all these material things, on all these material amenities, the more they become totally, completely humiliated by the dependence on these material things. Ultimately, we are not dependent on this. We are only dependent on God. But because we have forgotten Him, we think we are dependent on all these material things. We need so many things. And desires proliferate more and more and more and more. But when somebody remembers God, he doesn't need anything. He has the Son within himself. He's happy. He's always warm. He's never cold. So this is how Krishna explains to us. Mayarpita mano buddhir mama vaisya asamshaya. If you remember about me by doing everything which you do for me, mayarpita mano buddhir, by doing it as an offering for me, then you will live a healthy life, happy life, and then you will come to me for sure. Sometimes people think that spiritual and material is the opposite thing. Recently, in Guruvayur, I was giving a lecture to a Sanskrit students. I was shocked to find out that in Sanskrit department of Guruvayur College, which is called Sri Krishna College, they don't study Bhagavad Gita. They study everything else, but they don't study Bhagavad Gita. Even though it's Sri Krishna College, and Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's creation. So I gave a lecture about God or about Krishna, how important it is to remember about Him, or something, I don't know, something about Him. On this verse where Krishna says, Ashantasya Kutaksukham, when your intelligence is not connected with me, Krishna himself says, Ashantasya Kutaksukham, you will not have peace, and without peace, how you can be happy? So when I finished the lecture, the lady who is the principal of Sanskrit department, she said to me, and I was shocked when I heard her speaking about this. She said, I always thought that material and spiritual things are totally opposite. And if you have one, you don't have another. But you described it in such a way that it's not opposite. You know, I thought that in order to remember about God, I have to forget everything about everything else. But Krishna himself says, no, you have to do your duties. You have to do whatever you are supposed to do. But please use the duties, your naimittika karma and nitya karma, your regular duties which you do every day, like, you know, brushing your teeth or taking shower or whatever. On naimittika karma, all other karmas which we have to do, all these dharmas which are there for us in life, we have to do for Him. In this way, our intelligence will always be connected with Him. And He himself says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, if your intelligence and your heart are connected with me, yukta, buddhi yuktasya, you know, if the intelligence is yukta, connected with Krishna, and bhavana, if bhavana is connected with Krishna, then you have shanti. And if you have shanti, you have peace, then you have happiness. If you don't have connection with the Lord, there is no chance for you to be happy in this life. And ultimately, He's preaching this for us. He wants us to be happy. This is the only purpose why He's saying this. And again, you know, he knows how deprived we are when we forget about Him. He knows how cold we are, how unhappy we are, how unhealthy we are when we forget about Him. We develop all kinds of false beliefs, all kinds of false understandings of life, only because we forgot the simple thing that we have to remember about God every moment of our life. And the only way to remember about Him, the sure way to remember about Him, is to chant His holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He basically says that you have to engage your intelligence and your mind. Or in this verse of Bhagavad Gita, in 61st verse of Bhagavad Gita, he says you have to engage your intelligence and your heart. Bhavana. So to engage our intelligence, he gives Bhagavad Gita. To engage our intelligence, he gives the duties which we have to perform. And we have to know that this is what I'm supposed to do. I have to brush my teeth, I have to take shower, I have to do this properly. This is how to engage our intelligence in connection with Him, to fulfill our duties. But to engage our heart, which is most important, which is even more important than to engage our intelligence. To engage our heart in Him, we have to chant the Holy Name. Because when we chant the Holy Name, the connection is there, established very firmly. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There is a lot of philosophy behind it. I will not go too much into it. But in short, the sound contains Rupa. The Nam contains Rupa of the Lord. And if we chant the name of Krishna, the Rupa of Krishna, the blissful form of the Lord comes to our heart. Even if we don't know, even if we don't understand this, His form is coming to our heart. And ultimately, when His form is coming to our heart, at one point, Krishna will start performing His Leela within our heart. We will see His Leela in our heart. And at that moment, we will become the most happy, because His Leela is the manifestation of bliss. It's made of bliss. It's Ananda Chinmaya. But even if His form is Ananda Chinmaya, and His name is also Ananda Chinmaya, the sound Krishna is also Ananda Chinmaya. It's made of Ananda and Chit, consciousness and bliss. They said in Padma Purana that Madhuram Madhuram Madgalam Etat Madgalam Mangalanam Sakalani Gama Vali Satpalam Chit Swarupam. The name of Krishna is the fruit, the ripened fruit of all the Vedas. Sakalani gamam vali satpalam. Vali means the vine. Vali satpalam. Satpalam means the real fruit, the real achievement. Chitsvarupam. And it has chitsvarupam. And then it is said that sakrit, even if once somebody Shradaya Kelayava, if one pronounced the name of Krishna, Krishna Nam, once, whether with face, Shradaya, or Helayava, with some contempt, just by joking, or just by deriding somebody, you know, you Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So he said, Tarayat, Krishna Nama. Any human being can be delivered by this Krishna Nam. Any Krishna, any human being, just once pronouncing His name. And therefore, while explaining these verses in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, He always again and again comes to this point. If we want to remember about God, there is only one way to remember about God. Everything else doesn't work in Kali Yuga. The mind is too disturbed. But one thing will work always, that is the Holy Name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And that's why so many people are chanting it. Everyone is chanting. The only few exceptions is us. Everyone else is chanting the Holy Name. Because this is the most important and the most easy and purifying process in this day and age, which we should all follow. And by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we can do this, and this practice is becoming very powerful when we do it following the bona fide line of disciplic succession. This practice will immediately become very powerful and purifying. Anyway, I think I should stop now. I have been talking too long. Thank you very much. Yes, questions. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, I was hearing one of your lectures on subject. You said that mind is a person who, you know, who makes arrangements so that your desires get fulfilled. But today you mentioned that mind is even during our lifetime, it acts as a separate entity.
Mind has some separate identity, but at the same time, he is basically there to fulfill our desires. Mind is a special arrangement of God, a special gift of God, which can make us feel that we are God ourselves. Mind is just a device. No. God gave us this device so that we would feel ourselves good. Nobody wants to feel ourselves small. We are very small. 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. But mind is there to give us the feeling that we are very big. This is a special quality of mind. You know, he is there to tell us that you are very special. You are the most special. Nobody is so special as you. It doesn't matter how special you are. He will figure it out. He has his ways of explaining it to us. But in this way, we become very big in our mind. You know, and we feel good when we are big. We feel Brahman. Brahman means big. Brahman, Brahmadi, Brahmadi, iti Brahman. Brahman is someone who is big himself and who can make everyone else big. So the same thing is being done with us by the mind. Mind makes us big in our own understanding, and you know, we can also, you know, elevate others. Anyway, so mind is independent in one sense because we are not completely, totally in control of the mind. It's like this. It's simultaneously independent and dependent. Independent because it's like a computer. In computer there is a software. So the software is there to fulfill certain task which is given to the computer by the programmer. But when it's given to the software, it more or less exists independently. So you as a soul gave this task to the computer of your mind. Make me big. Make me important. Make me the center of this creation. And then he says, yes, yes, sir. And he starts doing his things. And if it's necessary for that to become angry, he will make you angry. You know, the mind will become very angry and agitated. This is the way, you know. This is, you know, I'm so important. Somebody dare to offend me, and so on and so forth. So it is independent in one sense, but at the same time, it's only fulfilling our own innermost desire to be the center of creation. So it's just like this.
Yes. What happened to your mind after this construction mind?
He will go crazy for some time. The subtle body goes with the soul. The desires which is there in the subtle body, the mind is the, you know, receptacle of all the desires which is there. And all the samskaras are there. It's called citta in general. When Krishna explains, when Kapiladev explains the creation of this universe, he says that the first element of this universe, first material element, is Mahatattva. And Mahatattva, another name of Mahatattva is Buddhi, or the universal mind. First he creates this universal mind. It's a big, huge thing. It's like big internet. Right, and this huge thing, which is kind of informational, it's a media which contains information more or less. So on this internet we have our personal site, little personal site, the site of such and such das. So it's there. It's your personal site. So when and you have a special password, you know, nobody can have access to your own mind because it's kind of there. But of course some clever people can enter it and still see what's going on there. You know, those who are hackers. So there are some hackers who can enter into your mind, see what's going on there. But basically it's a part of the universal mechanism, so to speak. So when you leave the body, it's there with you, it's your personal thing, you have stored there so many personal data. You know, it's very valuable for you. So you keep it with you. And for some time, it's deactivated. It's kind of, it's in a suspense mood or whatever. It's in a sleeping mood, so to speak. But then when the new body comes, actually it is said that on the seventh month, some people in the womb of the, some, not everyone, but some people, some embryos in the womb of the mother, they start, you know, coming into consciousness. At this time, you know, actually mother have, may have some problems or whatever. But anyway, so the memory of your past life goes into subconsciousness more or less. You forget about it. And your conscious, the conscious part of your mind starts developing from the beginning. But it's still connected. The conscious part of your mind is still connected with subconscious part. And it's more or less formed by it. All the desires which you experience now is actually not the many of these desires are not from this life, especially persistent desires, very strong desires. In astrology, if you study astrology, there is Rahu Dasha, and Rahu Dasha is usually the period when very strong and persistent desire comes into your mind. This is the desires which you didn't fulfill in your past life. And Rahu Dasha is a special time in your life when you're supposed to fulfill all the desires which are there. So it's also an interesting point. Anyway, I will not get into astrology. This is not that important. But it's interesting. But specifically Rahu in our chart is an indicator of the past desires. But all other planets too. It's the description or symbolic description of our subconsciousness, which is more or less being fulfilled or being manifested during this time, lifetime. But we don't understand it really, how it works. But astrology is there to give us some understanding how our psychology works, what we really want, what we need to be to fulfill.
From my own side.
Yeah, it's your own side, but there is a lot of information there to which even you don't have access because you've forgotten the password. You don't remember the password of your past life, so you don't have so much access, but it's still there. Every now and then, Krishna is there, he says, memory is coming from me, so he is there. And sometimes he revives certain desires. He reminds you. What is the meaning of the statement of Krishna when he says that the memory is coming for me is that he is there in our heart and he reminds us this is the desire which you have to, which you have forgotten and now you have to fulfill it. This is what you wanted, what you really wanted, and you know, it, you may regret about it, but it's too late. Krishna is there and he says, you wanted it. Here it is. Take it. You really wanted it. So he is there, he is in the heart. He is ultimately operating this big computer and a small computer as Paramatma. He is the SISOP, system operator of this whole thing.
Maharaj was saying that the source of everything is one, that is God.
Yeah.
But there are several fates and several gods, and how did you zero in on one? How did you zero in on Krishna or Hare Krishna or something? And how does one explain that?
No, many gods, you know. If there was many gods, they would fight with each other. And we would be in trouble. So there's only one. Everyone else is more or less in relationship with him. And to understand that everyone is related to him one way or another means to be conscious of God. If we see prayers of Lord Brahma in Brahma Samhita. He explains how everything, he is the creator, but he explains how everything is connected with one God. Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. He says, Durga, oh, she's connected with God. Srishti Titi Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Rekachaeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga Ichhana Rupamati Yasya Chachesta Tesa Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Vajami. You know, she is creating, she is maintaining, she is destroying, but ultimately, Chayeva Yasya, she is Chaya. She is just a shadow of God. And whatever he wants, Ichhana Rupam, whatever he wants, whatever his desire is there, Ichhana Rupa, she follows this. So this is how you understand how Kali or Durga is connected with God. Shiram Yathayada Divi Kari Vishesha Yogat Sanjayate Nahitatakrita Kastihe Tukhya Shambhutama Vitathasamu Paiti Kariyat Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Who is Shiva? Shambhu? Shiram Yathayada Divi Kari Vishesha Yogat. Like milk and yogurt is the same, but there is some vikara, some change in the mood. They are not different. This Shambhu is not different. Not different in purpose. But Samupaiti Karyat, he is coming here for specific reason, to fulfill certain mission from the Lord, and so on and so forth. You know, he says, what is it? Yachakshuresha savitasa kalagrahanam rajasamasta suras murti rasesha teja kyasyagaya brahmati samrita kala chakra govinda madhipurusham tamaham bhajami. What is sun? Sun who is so powerful, he is his chakshu. And yasyagaya brahmati samrita kala chakra, why he is so obediently and diligently moving on his orb? Because yasya gaya, because he has got an order from the Supreme, from above. And so on and so forth. You know, this is, everything is coming from him, and this is what it means to remember about him, to understand how everything is connected with him. He says, there is another very interesting verse in Brahma Samhita. What is it? Dharmatak papa nichayadi. No. What is this? Dharma. Anyway, he says that Dharma is coming from me, and Papa is also coming from me. Tapamsi, yes. Srutayas, all the Vedas are coming from me, all the Tapasyas are coming from me, everything is coming from me. Yes. Thank you. So, even Papa, even the ability, even the different varieties of sin, which we cannot even create any sins without him first creating the sins. So he says that everything is connected to me, and you have to learn how to see this connection, how to understand this connection. Again, how is that? The Papa Nichaya.
You say that we should always think of Krishna, always think of Lord in our activities, daily activities. So now people who are working, who are householders, who are going to school or studying colleges, how do we think of Krishna all the time? How is it possible? We are busy with our house jobs, and how is it that we think of Krishna all the
time? I'm doing it for Krishna. In the morning you make this resolve. This is for you, Krishna. I am yours. When we chant the holy name, and the understanding should be that I am his, I belong to him, I am a part of him. It's not that I am separate from him, I am part of him. And I want to re-establish this connection. And when we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, basically it means I am offering myself to him. And when I am offered, everything which I do is automatically offered. If somebody becomes a servant or slave of somebody else, whatever he does not belong to him. It automatically belongs to him. He doesn't have to bring it to him separately and say, this is my offering to you. He belongs to him, and therefore whatever he does belongs to his master. So when we chant the holy name, this understanding has to be there that we belong to the God. And then automatically whatever we do will be offered to God, will belong to Him, will connect us with Him. You know, we are doing it for Him. We are not doing it for ourselves. Why should we do it for ourselves? It's His. Our children are His. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sings, he says, Manasa Odeho Giho. Everything belongs to you. What is this? Manasa. Yo Kichumor. Arpilu Duapade Nanda Kishor. Manasa Odeho Giho. Yo Kichumor. It's not mine, it's yours. Arpilu Duapade Nanda Kishor.
Maharaj, in the beginning of the lecture, talking about how you should do what you're supposed to do, and of course remember Krishna in his activities, and this proverb's question is how to do that. Mm-hmm. You answered that. And I don't find that there is much talk about what people are supposed to do, and I'm just wondering if you have some thoughts on that. Because, you know, when you say do what you're supposed to do, then does that mean we all just think of, okay, I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to be a lawyer, I'm going to be a bus driver? Do you have some thoughts on that?
I do.
You do? Anyway,
it's a difficult question, because we're living in a very chaotic society, right? And previously the Vedic society was very structured, and everyone, you know, there was no question of what I'm supposed to do. Everyone more or less knew what he's supposed to do according to his status, according to his position. And there was so much stress in this, you know, there are ten Dharma Shastras, you know. And ten Dharma Shastras, it's very clearly explained what everyone is supposed to do. Some Dharma Shastras are specifically more connected with the activities of a Brahmana, some Dharma Shastras are more for Kshatriya, some Dharma Shastras are for householders, and so on and so forth. So there are specific, very structured society. We are living in a chaotic society. And everyone first has to figure out what he's supposed to do, and it takes usually 40 years of our life. then it becomes a little more clear. But of course astrology is there to help us to understand a little better what is our psycho, you know, physiological structure or whatever, what we are more meant, you know, in our chart we have this Karmasthan, the 10th house, you know, supposedly all the propensities or proclivities are there. But, you know, even now, still there is some, you know, more or less understanding of what you're supposed to do. If you're male, you have to behave like a male. If you're female, you have to be female. So it's basically trying to, you know, there are some general things which we anyway have to do. And like Ramanujacharya, while explaining this verse, he says that basically when Krishna says Maya Pitamanobuddhi, he means Naimitika karma and Nitya karmas, which everyone has to do. And Nitya karmas, you know, it basically means what we have to do every day. Every day's activity. Getting up early in the morning, taking shower, brushing teeth, and, you know, offering some prayers, doing Sunday vandana, whatever, all these things which everyone has to do still. Eating, you know, this we have to do for Krishna. Because we anyway doing something. And then, you know, all these Naimitika karmas which are, Naimitika karmas, it's also, everyone more or less is doing, you know, Naimitika karmas means Vivaha karma, you know, everyone is getting married. So this also has to be done as an offering for him. Even in a very general kind of term, it has to be connected with God. Whereas specific kind of things, it's much more difficult, of course. But you know, Basically, you know, if we're talking about, I don't know, we can talk about Varnashram, of course, you know, and maybe we can talk separately about this.
Do you think that the ISKCON movement or the Hare Krishna movement is, or to be more precise, do you think Srila Prabhupada wanted the members of the Hare Krishna movement to try and establish a Vedic society and in that sense give direction to what people are supposed to be doing?
Of course. Definitely. Satchinanda Maharaj has a very interesting scheme or way of understanding it, and I really like it very much. It basically said, when it comes to the society and to the directing society, and of course we cannot direct society unless we ourselves organized in a similar way. Mm-hmm. It basically says that there are five levels of the duty, so to speak, which everyone has to more or less do. The first is sattva, and the first directions which we have to do, implement in our life and give to others, is to live a sattvic life. In the material sense, to establish our life on a very firm foundation of sattva. Our food should be sattvic, our entertainment should be sattvic, our sleep should be sattvic. This is the first thing. Second is dharma. Dharma means more or less your duties or your occupation, what you have to do according to your proclivities, propensities, according to your nature. Third is atma, the third duty which is there, to meditate, and by meditation to try to understand how I am different from the mind. And this is also something which we have to do ourselves, and which we have to explain to others, how to distinguish between our mind and the soul, or us, the consciousness. This is Atma, then Paramatma. Then next level of understanding and next level of duties and next level of organization in the society in one sense should be our next level of knowledge which we have to understand. That everything is more or less directed from one source, that there is Paramatma, who is in charge of everything. And that's basically to learn how to offer prayers, how to relate to God who is in your heart, how to understand this connection, that God is already there, that He is not somewhere else, He is there. So that's another kind of circle which is there. And ultimately bhakti, the ultimate duty of the soul is to develop love. So this is five things which we individually have to establish in our lives, and which we also have to establish as a society. Society on the mode of sattva, society which is based according to the, you know, proper duties or the proper meaning of your life. The life should be meaningful with the fulfillment of all the abilities which is there and all the program which is there. Then understanding, you know, meditation and understanding that I am eternal. Then understanding my relationship towards the God in my heart, and ultimately the understanding the highest duties, which is bhakti. So that's how he suggests to deal with this issue. If we want to establish this, we have to more or less establish it ourselves and to propagate in the same areas. To teach people in the same areas. In this way, you know, when we preach vegetarianism, is not something really separate. It can be a part of what we're supposed to do, if it is ultimately connected with the highest duty of the human being, which is bhakti. You know, if we keep the whole picture in mind, because if the human beings are outside of the range of sattva, then they don't feel the attraction of Krishna. So the initial feeling of attraction of Krishna is being felt when somebody is more or less sattvic or established in goodness. And then ultimately he can be brought closer and closer to God. So that's that's his scheme, which he is trying to realize.
What's his reference for that scheme?
It's coming from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, from Sri Chaitanya Sikshamrita. See, in Sri Chaitanya Sikshamrita, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining the secondary duty, which is basically social duty, so that human being, he gives this. As far as the first question is concerned, it really depends on how you remember God. It may be enough, it may not be enough. It really depends on the intensity of your memories of God. If you do it as a way of some formality, it may not be enough. We know this, there is this story about, you know, this famous story, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, he explained this story. Just think about God once in the evening, once in the morning. That's it. But it's really not enough to say think about God, because it can become really formality, you know. Okay. If you sincerely at this moment think about God, and if you offer everything which is there, including your purpose of life, your whole being to Him, then you can. And besides that, still, even though it is difficult to remember about God when we are busy with all these things, we still can remember about Him. If the chanting of the Holy Name becomes our habit, because in this way you can always be with God in the form of His name. You know, you can think about so many things, but the thought of Krishna, of God, will be the background of your existence. So, therefore, our recommendation is to remember about God intensely in the morning when our mind is more or less peaceful and calm, and try to do it as much with the quality and sincerity in the morning. And this way you will not forget about Him during the day. You will remember about Him. If this morning meditation, and, you know, to be sincere, you have to devote some time to this. And it's not enough to give 1 minute to this remembering. You have 24 hours. Please give at least 1 hour to this. And still, you have 23 hours for a lot of things. 1 hour is not such a big thing. Or at least half an hour. But, you know, if you really want Sadata Bhava Bhavitaha, Krishna says you have to cultivate certain mood. And to cultivate certain mood, you have to churn. You have cultivation means, you know, it requires some time. So if it is done in such a way, then it's enough. Then no need to remember about Him in the evening. In the morning, it's enough. You will remember about Him in the evening too. If you intensely remembered about Him in the morning. but it has to be done with certain kind of sincerity. As far as materialism and spiritualism is concerned, whether they go together, it depends, you know. When you first ask this question, materialism and spiritualism, materialism doesn't go with spiritualism as such, because the values and the basic understandings of these philosophies are totally different. You know, materialistic values means I only live one life, and that's it. And therefore I have to really squeeze out this life. and get as much as possible from this one life. But when you explained what you meant, I think it is possible. Moreover, this is the scheme of Vedic society. Vedic society, see what happens in modern society. People are not happy in material sense because they are running after money. In Vedic society, it was explained very clearly that people have four goals: dharma, artha, kama, moksha. In the modern society, there is only two goals: artha and kama. There is no dharma and there is no moksha. So because people live with these two goals, they are not fulfilled. They are really not happy. In Hitopadesha, I believe, there is a beautiful verse which says that you have to, we all want to enjoy, right? This is ultimately when you ask, you know, I want to achieve something. But basically, you know, materialism means I want to enjoy. So in Hitopadesha it is explained that you have to enjoy in such a way that your money is not wasted. Some people, they go so much into enjoyment mood that they waste all their money. So artha has to be there, because this is important. Artha has to be there. Then it is said that you have to enjoy and to earn your money in such a way that dharma is not jeopardized. In other words, you can enjoy and you can earn your money, but not by compromising dharma, the principles of religion. You have to do it in a proper way, in a sattvic way, in a pure way. And then it is said, you have to pursue kama and artha and dharma, these three goals, in such a way that the moksha is guaranteed. It's not forgotten. Then everything is fulfilled. So, if this is in mind, keeping this in mind, and having this in mind, we fulfill our duty in such a way that we are doing our dharma, and you know, we are fulfilling our desires by doing our dharma, doing it in a proper way. Then we become happy, and because we become happy, you know, ultimately we can put the spiritual goal. The scheme of Vedic society is to make you happy as much as possible in this life, so that you don't have any illusions or unfulfilled desires, and you can concentrate completely on the spiritual goal. What happens in the modern society, people aren't happy in family life. In India, it's not so much prevalent yet, but it's definitely coming. In the big cities, it's already there. So much divorces is there. You know, I came to one friend of mine. I was shocked. They brought some ladies from there. You know, it's a very rich, modern complex, living apartment complex. Rich people live there. There were three ladies or four ladies who came. Three of them were divorced. And the fourth one was in the process of divorce. I was totally, completely shocked by this. But it's coming. In the West, it's... But what happens, because people don't fulfill their duties, they try to be happy without fulfilling their duties. They're not becoming happy, and they still have illusion that because I didn't become happy this time, I should try to become happy next time, or something like this. So they get married again and again and again. They get married once, twice, third time, you know, the fourth time, usually when they're 60, you know, and they have few children in their marriage ceremony who are celebrating the marriage of their father. So it's a very funny experience, you know. The son is present during the marriage of his father. You know? It's unheard of. It's crazy. But why? They are not fulfilled. They are not happy in their material life. And they still cherish the hope. Hope against hope. The third time, the sixth time, the fifth time, there was this, you know, one famous cinema star, movie star, what's her name? Elizabeth Taylor. She had 10 husbands. I don't know whether she had 11th one. Definitely not. Yeah, you're behind. 10. 10 husbands. So
She married twice.
Huh?
She married one of them twice.
she was still hopeful. You know? Every time in a new marriage, she was still hopeful. I will become happy. So this is a waste of time, total waste of time. Therefore, Vedic society is organized in such a way that to explain to you what you have to do to become happy, maximally happy. And for that you have to fulfill your duties. You have to behave in such a way which is expected from you. And if you do it, you'll become happy. You know, nowadays people are very much obsessed of their rights. In a Vedic society there is no talk about rights. It's only to talk about duties. But when you fulfill your duties, when you talk about rights, and when you're obsessed about the rights, you're always unhappy. Because you always feel insecure, you know, what if my rights are not fulfilled? But if you, because your rights are dependent on others. Others have to give you rights. But your duty is only dependent on you. And this world is created in such a way, if you fulfill your duties, your rights are automatically fulfilled. Your needs are fulfilled if you fulfill your duties. So, in a Vedic society, it was explained, if you want to be happy, do what you're supposed to do. You will become happy. Don't be obsessed about the thought, how I will become happy. You will become happy. Do your duties. Fulfill your duties. Everything what you need will come to you. If you only think, you know, how I will become happy, what is the way, what is the scheme to become happy, you will never become happy. And this is the mistake of the modern society, because they're always running behind this mirage. Behind this ghost of happiness. But it's, they never cannot catch him. So, this is how you can become happy. Please remember, it's four goals.
Is there a conflict between Vishnu and Krishna? Because Krishna is always called a duty for the society. For example, I'm duty towards myself, I'm duty towards the society.
The conflict may be there. You cannot completely avoid this kind of conflict. But ultimately, the scheme of Vedic culture or the Vedic philosophy, Vedic understanding, is to become, to make you free, to emancipate you. Ultimately, that's the ultimate purpose of all Vedic scriptures, to emancipate you. Emancipation is the goal. But the way for freedom, or how to achieve this goal, it's a little paradoxical, because we are programmed now to think that I become free if I am free from my duties. But the Vedic society is teaching you how to become free by fulfilling your duties. And the comparison which is given, in particular in Srimad Bhagavatam and some other Vedic scriptures, is the rope which is there in the nose of a bull. So, as soon as the bull goes off his way, he immediately feels the pain, because the rope is there. But while he's going and properly, he doesn't feel any pain. There is no pain. He's very happy. He's free. But he's free to go only the way he's supposed to go. As soon as he goes off, he feels the pain. He feels these things. So the way to emancipate ourselves is to fulfill our duties, to do our duties, to do what we're supposed to do, and at the same time to develop the internal freedom. Because when we're doing our duties, then the disturbances which are coming from outside are minimized. They really come to practically nil. Whereas if we're going off our duties, then there will be unlimited disturbances. We try to free ourselves on the expense of society, you know. I want to be free, therefore I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, all these people are on my case, you know, why do I have to do this? Then you will be always disturbed and you will not be free. Freedom will not be achieved. So the way to achieve freedom is to understand what you're supposed to do, do it, and at the same time by doing this, develop this internal freedom. The freedom is not external. The more we're running after external freedom, the more, the less free we become in reality. So that's the problem. That's the problem with all these emancipation movements, all these movements. They're running after external freedom, and they will never achieve it. They will only achieve the opposite results. Yes. In a practical sense, it is like this also. There is, in a practical sense, we have to also understand that I have very important duties, spiritual duties, and I have to have time for this. I have to, somehow or other. And it's not in contradiction with other duties which I have, but I really have to allocate some time for this, you know. And the way to do it, of course, that's another thing. How to manage my own life. Sometimes you have to say no. Sometimes, you know, even while living in the society, we have to say no. It's
even that selfish advice for my growth. If I can use the same time to help 100 people around me,
you will not be able to help 100 people around you unless you yourself are healthy and spiritually strong. So if you want to help others, and if at the same time, if you totally, completely give out yourselves and you are mess yourself, you will ultimately not be able to give others. Even for the sake of others, you have to take care of yourself. The wealth, the health which you need for this health, right? You know, if you totally neglect your health, you will not be able to help others. Moreover, you will force others to help you. No, it's not enough, because unless you give attention to your own spiritual development, self-analysis, like it is very important to study scriptures, and studying scriptures in Sanskrit is called svadhyaya. It basically means self-analysis, and you study scriptures, you analyze yourself. Unless you do this, you will not be able to help others purely. You will think you're helping others, but at the same time, you will have some hidden selfish motivation. And this hidden selfish motivation will ultimately poison your consciousness and your work and the results of your work. People will not be happy with you and things like this. So unless you dedicate certain amount of time to develop yourself spiritually, to self-analyze yourself, to remember about God, to establish God's name firmly within your heart, you will not be able to do everything else. You will not be able to do properly and purely.
You say that, last question. You say that in the morning, at least sometime, you should devote in even doing God. I mean, what is the actual process we should remember God? Because someone can have a process, just show incense sticks, they can show incense sticks for afternoon also. Or they can sit and do, you know, puja for 1 hour. I mean, is this enough? What is the actually Kali Yuga which is actually applicable? How should we do this thing? Because it's very important for the people here. How do they take it?
You know the answer. I already told that the best way to remember God is to chant His name, because His name is non-different from Him. And when we chant His name, it comes, and that has a very powerful effect upon our consciousness. It has a purifying effect, because By chanting his name, we're always in contact with him. And his name is Chinmaya Swarup. It's Chidananda Swarup. It's pure consciousness and a pure bliss. It's not material thing. Therefore, you can chant as much as you like. You will never get bored. You chant again and again Hare Krishna mantras. You're still in bliss. And more you chant, the more blissful you become. And this is the real way to do this. And those people who don't give the spiritual practice, sometimes people, you know, being somewhat selfishly motivated, they don't explain what we're supposed to do. But our personal sadhana is very important. And the single most important sadhana, especially nowadays, is chanting the holy name. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam Kalam Nasti, Eva Nasti, Eva Nasti. Not the way, so, and everyone agrees to this. I came from Guruvayur, and Guruvayur, it's very important. It's interesting because the whole temple is run by Mayavadis. The old Shaivas, Shankaracharya established this system. But every day they have some kirtan in the temple. At least half an hour they chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna. Everyone in this town chants the holy name, and here everyone chants everywhere. This is the most important practice. All the practices, the sum and substance. Like the other day, I was speaking with Suresh Acharya, who is the principal of the Sanskrit college, and he started reading a little book of Madhvacharya on the niti, on the everyday's activity, and this book. From Madhvacharya starts with this Satatam Smartavyam Satatam Vishnu Vismartavyam Najatuchit Sarva Vidini Shadasyu Etayora Vakinkara. So that is his first verse. It all the other duties, all the other vidis and nishadas is to remember God. And how to remember God? The next verse is there. How to remember God? To chant his name. When you eat, it is said, you chant the name of Govinda. When you take shower, you chant the name Keshava. When you brush teeth, you chant the name Hari. When you wash your face, you chant Madhava. So the name of God is the standard practice, and Hare Krishna mantra is the most powerful out of it. Okay, thank you very much. Really sorry.
Surya Nas Bhakti Vigyan Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai.